Martin Ising stood over the body of Dr. Milo Bland. In his blood-stained hand he held the instrument of Bland's demise. Once the professor ceased to breathe, an odd calm came over Martin, then a great feeling of tiredness. He was suddenly aware of how long it had been since he slept. His arms and legs felt heavier than they had any right to. He dropped the stone head of Samuel Beckett. It fell next to the head of Milo Bland. They were equally full of life. Martin was very, very tired. He walked out of the office like he was heading off to bed. Something, perhaps his natural good manners, made him close the door behind him. He wandered out of the Dullard building. He wandered into the tunnels. Coming around the corner towards the library, he bumped into a flustered Dick Rock, hurrying in the other direction. Martin didn't even notice. He stumbled and continued on in his daze up the stairs and into the light of early morning. When he felt the rays of the sun on his face, he stopped. Where was he going? Home? The small rented room with the yellowy smoke-stained ceiling and the smelly worn carpet. There was nothing there. He walked on. It was a beautiful fall day, sunny and warm. The leaves were turning, but it was gray in Martin's soul. He couldn't see the sun in the sky or the birds in the trees. He walked down to the river. He often went there when he wanted to think. It seemed so much farther today. He dragged himself along. He was exhausted. It didn't occur to him, but he was also badly dehydrated. On the bank of the river, he stood looking down into the water. It flowed swiftly a couple of feet below, dark and frightening. He could think of no reason why he didn't belong in it. For a brief moment, it seemed he had reached a place of total clarity. He had no talent. He had no future. He was nothing but a murderous undergrad, and there was no way he'd get his degree now. He wasn't sure, but homicide was probably grounds for expulsion. What would he do when he got out of prison? He'd have nothing, and he'd be over 40. He would have lots of time to work on his poetry in prison, but he suspected the other inmates might not feel very friendly towards a frail poet. Or they might feel a little too friendly. Martin jumped. The water was surprisingly warm and inviting. It was moving swiftly, but there was no undertow. Martin was swept up and bobbed gently along. Without thinking, he began to paddle his arms a little, the legacy of years of forced swimming lessons. Actually, it was quite pleasant shooting along in the fresh water. His headache disappeared. It was comfortable, warmed by an unusually hot and long summer. Except that he was fully dressed, Martin felt like he had in his childish summers at the cottage. He felt a freedom he hadn't felt in a long time. He was happy as a suicidal poet who's just committed a murder can be. Martin didn't know what to do. On this beautiful fall, almost Indian summer day, he was shushing along in the pleasantly warm river, just like all those summers as a kid at his uncle's cottage. The only thing preventing this from being an idyllic situation was that he was still fully dressed, had just murdered his professor, and had been trying to commit suicide. He didn't think he was anymore, but he wasn't sure. It required some thinking. Martin lay back, looked at the sky, and let the river carry him. It was a beautiful day. Not a cloud in the sky. High, high above, he saw a hawk circling lazily. At least he thought it was a hawk. He knew almost nothing about birds. Was his situation that bad? Well, yes, he had killed a professor. That was pretty bad. But maybe he wasn't dead. Martin hadn't actually checked for a pulse or anything. Maybe he'd just knocked him unconscious. That seemed more likely. Martin had never even hit someone before. It seemed unlikely that he'd killed someone his first time out. He probably just knocked him out. Assaulting a professor was pretty bad, but it wasn't murder. They'd kick him out, but he'd decided to leave anyway. He might have to do a little time, but that would be good for his poetry. The river was turning slightly. It turned Martin with it. They were both picking up speed. Life wasn't so bad. Clear blue sky, the sun, the birds, this pleasant warm sensation, being carried effortlessly along, borne on the river's current. He seemed to be moving faster. Martin looked up in time to see and hear the roar of the rapids. He'd forgotten about those. He turned quickly over and began to do something that was supposed to be heads-up front crawl, but wasn't. It was panicky flailing, and not tremendously productive panicky flailing at that. The river had the advantage over Martin. It was much stronger, and hadn't been sitting up all night smoking and drinking coffee. Martin was hopelessly outmatched in this very uneven contest. The river was bound to win. Martin went bouncing and flailing into the rapids. He struggled mightily against the force of the water until the top of his head struck the sharp edge of a rock. Ironically, pretty much where the pointy end of Samuel Beckett's stone nose had penetrated the skull of Dr. Bland. He fell rather rapidly into a state of unconsciousness. The river bore him along, without further complaint or struggle, until it deposited his lifeless body in a tangle of brush and junk on the edge of the water, half a mile down. Oh, ignominious end for a noble poet.